So today, some of the areas that I'm going to cover is on this early childhood prevention initiative. It's called ECOPE, which actually allowed this partnership between ourselves and primary care clinics within Los Angeles County. I'll give you a context overview of obesity rates in LA County. What are clinical pathways, purpose of the evaluation, research questions, methods, some of our preliminary results, and recommendations for future program planning. So the whole integration of public health and primary care is really evolving, and it's a critical, I mean, we're meeting these two institutions at a really critical juncture. So in 2012, the Institute of Medicine report, Primary Care and Public Health, Exploring Integration to Improve Population Health, was not just a statement of facts, it was a mandate. In our Affordable Care Act post-reform environment, it is critical that public health and primary care partner to address not only patient care, but the determinants of health to affect real change in population health. And what I'm going to present to you here is an exercise in that partnership. In a major urban area between not just a public health department, but a really important partner, which is federally qualified healthcare centers in Los Angeles County, who, for the most part, are going to be serving a lot of those folks that are now becoming insured as a result of the Affordable Care Act. So just to give you an overview, this was the initiative that we were funded under that gave us this opportunity to try to explore and carve out this relationship between a public health and primary care. Basically, what this initiative did was it took a policy systems and environmental change approach. It looked at not just micro level change, but also this macro level change. So individual nutrition education programs, as well as trying to intervene within the food environment with restaurants, with childcare centers, with food marketing, and with clinics. So as far as childhood obesity epidemic is concerned, obesity is currently the most common chronic condition in childhood. Convincing evidence shows that eating patterns and the trajectory to adolescent and adult obesity are already established in early and mid-childhood. These are just some rates in California. We're seeing, especially among young children, which is an important population, and the population that we're focusing on primarily for this particular initiative, that it has been increasing pretty steadily since 1989 to 2011. And California's rates are some of the highest in the nation. Here we have some prevalence rates of obesity among LA County residents. We see that it, again, is gradually increasing. And here we have some current basically a layout of childhood obesity and its intersection with economic hardship. You see that those areas where there's greater economic hardship have higher quartiles of childhood obesity in Los Angeles County. So we actually conducted a public opinion poll, our public health department, looking at parents of young children and their opinions of this epidemic of chronic of obesity in Los Angeles County. This was done with parents of young children, and we see these were early results that we got last year. We see that 93% of parents believe that childhood obesity is a serious problem in Los Angeles County, and we're also seeing that the vast majority believe that it's both an environmental and individual problem. Those are the contributors to childhood obesity. If we broke up just environment, those that just responded that it was the environment was a problem, about a quarter said that the environment only was a problem to childhood obesity, and about 5% of parents believe that it's an individual issue. And then here we actually see public opinion on, again, we're trying to gauge public interest on the role of certain institutions in intervening on childhood obesity, and we see that parents are actually wanting these institutions that interface with their children to please step up and help with this whole childhood obesity epidemic, help them reinforce these good habits. And you see that over almost 80% of parents are asking that healthcare providers be one of those institutions that step up. So the literature supports public opinion. So parents view pediatricians, primary care physicians, and other healthcare providers who work with pediatric patients as having the most authority in offering advice about child health. And these professionals play an important role in making parents aware of their child's excess weight early on and allow time for intervention and prevention of obesity and related chronic conditions. So the implementation, the primary challenges in primary care is that the implementation of evidence-based guidelines into primary care practice remains a healthcare challenge, and childhood obesity strategies and guidelines are no exception. And again, this is kind of our role that we're starting to carve out as a public health department in helping to provide some of that capacity to primary care clinics in Los Angeles. So while knowledge synthesis and clinical practice guidelines have emerged as rigorous means to translate and make research more accessible for practitioners, these may not be sufficient to change practice behaviors in complex settings, such as the chaotic environment of primary care safety net clinics. And you're going to see that we're going to be introducing a model to primary care clinics to try to standardize this process. Implementation's very incremental. So primary challenges is providers identify obesity for only about half of obese children, and the lowest rates of obesity identification occurred among children less than 5 years old, 5 years of age, and those with milder degrees of obesity. Children identified as obese, for those that are identified as obese, treatment is often not consistent with current recommendations. So what are clinical pathways? This is actually... we're just kind of stepping into this arena of clinical pathways, and there's a lot of major institutions that are integrating it, and it's been integrated mostly within universal healthcare systems, but also within hospital systems, within specialty care. But clinical pathways are multidisciplinary care plans that outline the sequence of timing and actions necessary for achieving expected patient outcomes and organizational goals regarding quality, cost, patient satisfaction, and efficiency. The aims of CPWs, clinical pathways, is to link evidence to practice for specific health conditions. In the past few years, the implementation of clinical pathways in clinical practice has increased significantly. They're also called, if you look in the literature, critical pathways, critical paths, and care paths. So CPWs are appropriate for post-reform ACA, which encourages multidisciplinary team-based approach. CPWs are also widely used and effective in multidisciplinary inpatient and secondary care, and we're seeing it in Canada, Australia, and the United Kingdom. We're seeing it being implemented at Cedars-Sinai, in Los Angeles, and in many children's hospitals throughout the country. They're increasingly used in primary care, and especially in primary care medical homes, on these team-based care settings, as a proposed guide to implementation of evidence-based care. CPWs have the unique features as they guide and manage patients with specific conditions, undergoing specific procedures, commencing their first contact with the healthcare system, and typically map patients' journey and interface between health services and referrals. So it helps standardize care. So this is the clinical pathway model that we actually proposed to our clinicians in these FQHCs in LA County. And again, LA County has one of the most comprehensive safety net clinic systems in the country. So this was exciting and challenging. So at the very least, what we wanted to do was to see some level of screening and identification. And then once a child was screened and identified, then they either went into the path of anticipatory guidance, which is just prevention of those that were not overweight and obese, and for those that were overweight and obese, We asked that there was an actual diagnosis, that they did 5210 messages, that there was some level of motivational interviewing, and that there was also follow-up and linkages to resources in the community. So the purpose of the evaluation was to determine sustainable change in institutional practice. We're not looking at health outcomes. We want to see that there's actually change in practice. And again, what we want to do is be able to collect what change is happening to inform future program planning. So some of our research questions is, was there a broad clinic buy-in into the program? Can primary care safety nets clinics feasibly and effectively implement incremental clinical pathways? What are some of the elements of effective implementation, and what are some of the elements that can improve program design? So some of our methods was that clinic selection, we selected FQHCs and geographically representative areas of LA County. This was incremental. We weren't expecting, you know, consistent implementation of the clinical pathways model. We were just hoping to see something happen, especially since we're just trying to carve out this relationship with primary care clinics. Most of what we were doing were observational assessments. We were going into the clinic, seeing in the exam room whether the model was being implemented. So we did that at baseline, 3 months and 6 months. We did key informant interviews with pediatric providers at baseline, 3 months and 6 months. And administrative data assessments. We actually have not done the administrative data assessments, but it is part of what we're collecting in order to give us a richer context of what may be going on in the clinic settings. These are the clinics that we actually intervened on in LA County. You see it's fairly representative of Los Angeles County. Good number of clinics. We're working with some of the largest FQHCs in the county. Oh, and just to go back, and you'll see that the stronger blue areas are areas of high obesity, high poverty. And so that's where these clinics tend to congregate. And then for our qualitative analysis plan, we used a domain grid format, so there was no transcription at all. We did, with our key informant interviews, there was a facilitator and note taker. And the note taker would just take bulleted notes on a grid with domains on it. Afterwards, the note taker would listen to audio of the key informant interviews and add anything that they may have missed. And this is just a really efficient way of collecting qualitative data. We learned it from Gary Ryan at RAND, who's kind of an international expert on qualitative data. So the qualitative data analysis involved discovering themes and sub-themes, winnowing themes, building hierarchies of themes, and building themes into theoretical models. This is what our provider grid looks like, our domain grid format. You'll see that we have domains within the grids, and then again, everything is bulleted under it, and this is how we collect our and distill our themes and sub-themes and come up with our theoretical models. The domains of the observational assessments is clinic, looking at clinic and patient profile, weight screening and identification, provider intervention, referral and linkages to community resources, tracking and follow-up, and any sort of additional observations. For our key informant interviews, we wanted to look at relevance and motivation, whether the institution was ready, their buy-in, their current response, what they were doing, hopefully they were implementing the CPW, feasibility, how feasible is CPW for the institution, barriers and facilitators, participant receptivity, meaning what patients would be most receptive or least receptive to the CPW and behavioral change, to design what would an ideal program look like. Was there any issues with the CPW as far as the provider was concerned, and tailored elements, just program-specific elements. So screening and identification. From our observational perspective, pediatricians at our partnering clinic sites were for the most part screening and identifying overweight and obese patients at the clinic. There was rare instances where when they could not intervene due to time constraints and urgent care visits. So on all visits, whether it be well-child visits or urgent care visits, whenever they saw an overweight obese child, they tried to intervene. There was system variability that we were a little bit concerned about. Some clinics within the same system, their EMR would change, so there would be a highlight in their EMR to actually flag the physician that somebody was overweight or obese. But we were realizing there was variability within systems where sometimes that flag didn't change. So there was concern of that it wasn't being done systematically, that flag wasn't being handled systematically within a system. From observational assessments, anticipatory guidance occurred only at well-child visits. Again, really quickly, I'm going to just rush through this. Again, from our observational assessments, provider intervention was occurring, but there were wide variability on how it was occurring within systems. There's nothing systematic and rarely recorded into the EMR. Most providers asked about diet and physical activity, but a minority, less than a quarter, used the 45210 messages. Most providers used BMI charting and showed charting to the patient, and a minority actually gave the chart to for the patient to take home. About a third of providers included goal setting with the patients, and a minority of providers used motivational interviewing. So again, from the observational assessments, there was a wide variability in pediatricians referring pediatric patients to community resources. Again, we need to really strengthen this piece because there was so much variability. Even those clinics that had internal nutrition education programs, there was a lot of variability in referral, and follow-up remained an issue. Follow-up remained an issue also for coming back to the clinic. If they were overweight and obese, only about 30% of those that were overweight and obese actually came back for a pediatric follow-up visits with the clinician. I'm going to skip this. These were actual results. I wanted to just go over really quickly the key informant interviews. They consistently emphasized the importance of intervening on childhood obesity and intervening and emphasizing prevention. Every pediatrician, and these are actual quotes from our providers, every pediatrician thinks that childhood obesity is important. Intervening on childhood overweight and obesity is essential. However, we are intensively treating it too late in the clinic. It should happen sooner, as soon as a child is introduced to solids. And we are lacking so much in prevention, it's hard to undo poor behaviors. Again, from the key informant interviews, it was consistently emphasized that parents oftentimes do not perceive their child as overweight or obese. Again, these are quotes from physicians. 2 to 5 years is a challenging range because of the weight curve dips, so kids may not look like they're gaining too much weight, but if you plot it out, you see they weigh more than they should. All parents think their kid does not eat enough, and I have seen parents who did not believe a child was overweight. It was not until it was coined as a problem that they learned about the dangers that they actually engaged. Again, from the key informant interviews, some of the barriers were these social, cultural, and institutional environment that were not supportive. So these are, again, some of those social determinants of health. There is generational conflict with families where moms and dads work very hard because they spend a lot of time with aunts, uncles, and grandparents that are giving them unhealthy options. Fast food seems to be a huge part of the routine, partly because people are busy working and it's affordable. It's hard for families to let go of their routine. Multiple families are living in one household. This was a major issue with this cohabitation issue or homeless issues. So families don't have a stable living environment. This was consistently said by providers. They have less control over their food environment and what they can cook and how much they can cook. Again, from the key informant interviews, they emphasize that clinics could serve as a resource to address cultural, social, and nutritional needs of patients. Clinics needed to become community resources for overweight and obese children. Clinics should serve as a hub for health and social supports for the community. And lastly, when they talked about these CPW models, they think it's a good guide, but it actually needs to integrate more. Even though they weren't integrating enough, I mean, just the small portions that we were telling them, they said that they really wanted to integrate co-occurring conditions like dental caries, asthma, which is basically the same messaging that they're giving with pediatric obesity, and they wanted to please integrate mental health. Mental health was a huge issue. So really quickly, just you know, the recommendations are just to treat the whole patient. CPWs need to be multi-layered and address co-occurring conditions. Obesity cannot be siloed and occur in a vacuum. Screening needs to be conducted for other morbidities, and pediatricians feel like social determinants of health were a major challenge. So again, just reflecting back with these partnerships, you know, this is a partnership between public health and primary care. We're still carving out these relationships. Implementation science is a part of this. It's going to be slow, incremental, but they still need to evolve and develop, and we must continue to provide capacity to address the complex health problems to impact downstream population health. So, thank you very much.